This is a podcast from the Queen City Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. My name is Logan, and that, of course, means you're listening to another episode of the Crown Cast. And Charlotte FC went and they played Nashville, and I very rudely predicted that it would be a 2-1 loss, and that is very unfortunately what it was. So I've decided to lay down the mantle. I accidentally predicted that Charlotte lost a game. I said, you know what? Maybe I've done too much. I need to stop. I can't touch this anymore. I have to leave it to the people who know what they're doing. And I have two of those people with me today. It's Josh. Hello, Josh.
Hey, guys. Not sure how we're the ones who know what we're doing since we got the prediction wrong, but I guess I'll take it.
Sure. And Ewan. Hello, Ewan.
Yeah, here we are. The eternal optimists who predicted draws.
So first and foremost, to all the listeners, I personally owe you guys an apology and a bit of an explanation. We do have a hat to give away for Brandon Cambridge. In the last episode, we said that there was going to be a post online for you to go and find out how to enter that giveaway. It will be coming. For the listeners, I have had a medical emergency in my family, and just about everything has hit the back burner. So I'm happy to be talking to you guys today because it means that I get to step away for a little bit and talk football and the sport I love. But it also means that a few of my other priorities have had to be reshuffled. If I sound like I have not rewatched the game in this one, it's because for the first time in a long time on one of these podcasts, I have not rewatched Charlotte versus Nashville, which means Ewan and Josh, I'm going to be asking you guys to do some of the heavy lifting. That sound all right?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I've managed to get a standard couple of rewatches in, and I still didn't know what minute the penalty incident was in, so I wasn't helpful on that.
Only a couple, Ewan.
There you go. If I had a third one, I would have been able to get it in there, but hopefully I'll be more helpful than I was there, trying to nail that down.
Nah, we believe in you, Ewan. First and foremost, to you all, thank you so much for being here. If you're deciding to spend your time with us, we love you. I'll say that again at the end, because it's true. And we'll go ahead and jump into the Nashville game. I think that there are a couple of things that we can say about the game that we can get out of the way quickly. The first is that I predicted a 2-1 loss, but there's no way I could have predicted how it happened. I do think that the process of reaching a spot and the spot you reach do have different conversations surrounding them. There is a note in our planning doc. Ewan, was it you who put the, or was it Josh who's put the XG comment here into this one?
That would be me.
It wasn't me.
That would be our stats guy. You want to talk about really quick how we have out XG'd everyone so far?
Yeah. I mean, again, small sample size, all those warnings, but you know, XG is something I look at as more of a, in general, how are you doing? You can use it a little bit to sort of be predictive once you get a big enough sample size about, like, you know, how good is a team with scoring and creating chances and all that. We're not anywhere near that point yet, but I do just think it's really interesting that when you look at these XG numbers and you look at our expected goals allowed as well, we are winning that battle for every single one of these games. It was 2.0 to 0.5 against NYCFC. It was 1.3 to 1.0 against Vancouver, 0.9 to 0.5 against Toronto, and then 1.2 to 0.8 against Nashville. As people will know, XG does not win you the game. You still got to actually score the goals. But I do still take that as kind of a positive side. And when you think about, again, where we've started this year compared with others, and then the three, you know, away game gauntlet, I do think that that's something we can look at and hopefully look to be a sign of better things to come, because maybe there'll be some positive regression when it comes to the actual goals that get scored and us being on the better end of those.
If we are coming up with these leads in XG, it is good, especially considering how we have had the away games. But one of the things we talked about previously was how strong our defense was. And that's going to lead me sort of transitionally into talking briefly about Adilson Milanda. It is not a surprise to anybody when I say I love Adilson Milanda, and I think he's potentially the best player at Charlotte FC. He is super young. He's super dynamic. He's a fantastic defender. And he's just an all-around great guy. So thumbs up to Adilson Milanda. I think I saw in this game at least one, potentially two, depending on how we feel after we discuss the first goal later on in this episode, times where we saw him be a kid. And we have seen him be so solid and so composed, and he does have that ice in his veins about him that we've talked about in the past. And I've talked about his red line. I've talked about the fact that if he wants to be a really fantastic defender, not just good, great, he has to bump up his red line, because there's a level of pressure at which he just kind of snaps. And I think we have seen the first instance of that in this one. The second goal we'll talk about in a bit, but Ewan, I'm going to jump to you. When you take out goal one, goal two, how did you feel about Adilson Milanda's performance?
The thing that stood out in this performance, taking away the two goals, is how much the opposition favoured trying to get him to build up from the back versus letting that play go down Andrew Privet's side. We've talked about over and over again kind of how much we like Adilson Milanda and how much we think there's a chance he might not be here in the next season or two, just because there'll be some demand for him, because we think there's a lot of potential there with him still being very young, 22 years old, with a lot of experience in MLS and also in Ligue 2 with Rodesh. This is, for me, this is the ceiling capper. This is the thing which, if he doesn't improve, this is going to keep that down, the ability to be productive in build-up, and the fact that he's still seen as someone who you can target in that area by opposition coaches. And from watching him play, I can't really say that they're wrong in doing that. He has improved. It's definitely a lot better than where it was, but you can tell that it's better than where it was because it's being coached into him. He's definitely been given solutions in certain areas. When it's instinctive and when he has to play fast, he can't really do it. That's one of the tells, I think. When the game speeds up and you have to do things very quickly and it can't be formulaic that, okay, the press is coming here, now it comes there, when you're not being pressured and you have the time to make the decision, that's when he struggles. It's one of the areas where you see Kalina actually look pretty decent playing out from the back, when he himself is not being pressured and he can, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's in the build-up and then like eventually find his guy after 4 or 5 seconds on the ball. That's the thing which stands out here. Also in the fact that in this game, we didn't pressure the opposition as much. So when you're not pressuring the opposition, the forward line is deeper, which obviously means the midfield line deeper, means the defensive line is deeper. So the things that have stood out a lot for Milanda, when we've pressured high and everyone else has gone high with it, that defending in behind, weren't really a ton of moments where we were defending in behind. There were a lot of transitions where the midfield was being bypassed quickly, and then our defensive line had to respond to, you know, 3-on-2s or 4v2s or 4v3s, those kind of things. But in terms of pure defending balls over the top, there wasn't as much of that, which is the thing in Milanda's game which stands out the most. Versus a game like this where it probably, we talk about games suiting a midfielder, we talk about games suiting a striker. Sometimes a game doesn't suit a centre-back, and this was probably one of them for him.
Hey, I think we can go ahead and talk about the goals themselves, because he is critical in both goals, depending on how much you feel he is relevant in the first one. Which, Josh, do you want to talk about the first goal that goes in on Charlotte?
Sure. I want to preface this by also saying that I think last week we called our episode Two Things Can Be True at Once, and I think I'm getting back to that theme a little bit here. Because I first and foremost want to say that the Nashville attacker, I think, does a really good job of finding the space between Privet and Milanda. And I think you have to give him credit for finding that space and then for the pick out. My issue, and admittedly this might be overly critical because I sometimes can be that with players, is that when that cross comes in, there are two Nashville defenders in the box. We have three guys in our box with a couple more coming back. We have the numerical advantage. The issue is that both of these guys are basically running towards Privet, and Privet is in a no-win situation. Milanda, there's something to be said about the space that he's covering, and that's a good thing. The issue I have is there's no one there. This guy is serving a ball in from almost the touchline. There's no Nashville defender at the near post. I would like Milanda to have had a little bit more awareness about what was going on behind him. And if he does, I think he's able to actually step in front of the Nashville attacker and potentially intercept this ball. This might be harsh, but again, you go and look at it, you sort of pause it, and stills can be misleading as well, I'll admit that. But when you pause it, when that ball's about to be coming in, again, there's just no one around him. And I just wish that he had a little bit more of that spatial awareness in that moment.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in here and defend Adilson Milanda because that's what I do. I'm a knight in shining armor for Adilson Milanda. And that is, I don't really feel like there's much on Adilson in the first one. And we'll let Ewan be the tiebreaker here because he actually knows football. But the setup for this goal is, one, done really well by Alex Mule, who we're going to be talking about later. He dives from the midfield at Privet. And the ball in is spectacular. It's over Adilson Milanda's head by inches. And Adilson Milanda makes a solid effort at it, and he's not a short guy. So there is a point for me at which you have to say well played to the other team. Now, there are probably a number of things we could have done in defense that would have helped prevent that cross from coming in as smoothly as it did. But once that ball is in the air, which, in my opinion, Adilson Milanda has very little he can do about from where he's covering his space in the field, he is being given that space to cover. It is a zone he has been told to cover, and he is covering it, from my perspective, to the best of his ability. Where I end up with questions is when you have that double team, when you have somebody run out of the midfield towards a defender, and as Alex Mule does really well, breaks off into the space between the two of them, who's going with him? What was the plan? Because there should have been some form of plan. Everybody knows if there's two people, the space in between them is the weakness. The space where somebody has to be handed off, or the space where there has to be a discussion beforehand, the space where somebody says, I'm the one who's going to cover the middle. What was the discussion beforehand? And if the discussion beforehand was, well, Adilson, you're larger than I am, I'm going to leave the middle to you, and Adilson didn't look back, then yeah, I got problems. If the question was somebody in the midfield supposed to be tracking that run as well, and we have a set of midfielders that one might describe as quite old for professional sports and weren't able to track that run? Was Yere Uranin supposed to shuffle over more and allow Andrew Privet to take the center? I'm not sure. When I go back and look at this, I didn't really see a midfielder who felt like they had responsibility of Alex Mule in that situation. I didn't really see that Yere was out of position. He's there with the play. And so my question is really more to Dean Smith of this. They must have known this was going to happen. At some point in time, someone was going to look at two people and say, the space in the middle is where you be danger. So what was the plan? And I'm not sure that I can put that on Adilson Milanda. Ewan, what are you thinking on this?
Yeah, that second one is interesting. The goal right in the middle, near the, you know, in the 6 yard box, the idea of shuffling between players and allocating, you know, who's responsible. The first goal, the interesting part of that, I think, which maybe didn't get a lot of coverage, is that Tyler Boyd makes a really good run to allow the diagonal. So kind of like the reason why there's a lot of time for that cross to come in, because Tyler Boyd makes a diagonal run across, drags Burn in a little bit. So not only is he more narrow than he was originally, his body weight's also going in that wrong direction. So now when the ball's out wide, a lot of time with Burn having a lot of space to make up. And what had happened 5 minutes before that was that we'd had the Diagara for Kerwin Vargas sub. And Kerwin Vargas and Tavares as well have done a really good job of their out of possession responsibilities, not just with the press, but when, you know, how deep they're supposed to be in those situations. If you go back and look at our three games so far, especially the two games that we played away from home, those two wingers have both played very deep when the opposition has the ball in our half in quite a settled situation. So I've been very aware of their responsibility versus Brek Diagara, who not only has just come on in this situation, he hasn't played on the wing in one of our games so far. He's been starting in the middle of the park, just behind the number nine. So that's one thing that I would come up with immediately if you're going to pinpoint something. Again, you guys mention it. The other team can do good stuff sometimes. They get paid as well, all those kind of things. You know, if they put in a pinpoint cross and they're really good header from Surridge, which it is, fair enough. But if you're looking to go process-wise and see how do we stop this, I think that is one of the areas where you would pinpoint that's a lot of space that can be created by just a simple, the ball's on one side of the field. They obviously have we talk about it, automatism, where if the ball's there, nothing's really happening. Left winger makes a cutting run, takes a bit of space away from the fullback. Now their fullback has a lot of space to receive the ball in. It can't be as easy as that. And it wouldn't probably have been as easy as that if we had our wingers drilled in their out of possession responsibilities, not cutting out the ball, but just getting to the fullback quicker when they have that, when they have the ball. So then once you have someone there who knows that they can cut out the cross, or if the cross is going to come in, they have a better chance of restricting it to certain areas, then Malanda can feel a little bit more comfortable to look around, probably. I think from the fact that the fullback had so much space to cross into, he was thinking quite zonally and being like, I have man responsibilities here with the players there, but I want to make sure I'm in good front post position, because Nathan Byrne has a really tough time or has been put in a really bad position to actually just cut out this cross. So let me get a little bit further so that this ball doesn't bounce or this ball doesn't get into the corridor of uncertainty. That was probably playing on his mind a little bit here. And again, if we're going to go back process-wise and look further back as to what we can blame here, that sub happening so quickly before this play happened, that's probably something that you would look at and think we need to drill players a little bit more in them early moments to just know exactly what responsibilities they have when they come on.
I think that's really well put, that you can see where the dominoes first started to fall. But either way, I do think it has to be said, it's an amazing cross. It is as good a cross as you are going to find. And Sam Surridge makes a spectacular splitting run in order to... Wait, is it Alex or Sam who scores the first one?
Surridge scores the first one, and Tyler Boyd makes that run to bring Byrne across a little bit.
Sorry, I got him switched in my brain. Sam Surridge makes an amazing run in order to free himself to get that header. Was it potentially too easy? I think probably yes. And I think that the coaching staff will have some discussions with all players involved on it, but I think they're going to have some discussions with goal number two that goes in. And this one for me is really easy. This one's on a Adilson Malanda. Watching this setup, we have been defending crosses into the box quite well. Adilson separates from his man, but right before the cross comes in, he looks at the guy who scores it, knows where he is, right? And he separates, and I think he feels like he has enough separation that there's no danger. He feels like there's enough space that he is clearly favorite for the ball and nobody's just going to come over the top of him. But the Nashville player goes right over the top of him. And for me, that is mostly on Adilson. As a professional defender, you have to know your spaces. If you want to be touch tight with your defender because you know you can outjump him, be touch tight. Be on him. Feel that contact. Know where he is. And if you're going to leave him behind because you are going to beat him to the ball, you better beat that player to the ball. You cannot end up flat-footed that close to your goal, allowing someone to come in with speed that can get over you and ultimately score on Charlotte. The only question I have on this goal is I have heard some talk about the fact that Christian Kalina is not doing a great job of maintaining the area just outside the goalposts and holding his box down, that he isn't quite strong enough and isn't able to claim that space as his own. Josh, the Christian Kalina question and his ability to claim space, it's come up again. How much do you feel like he has a say in this one?
I think in general, can be a fair criticism of Kalina. I'm not sure I'm apportioning too much blame to him on this one. Like, that's an outswinging ball. Maybe a better keeper does claim that. And I know that sounds harsh on him, but that's not that's not really what I don't really mean it in such a harsh way. I just mean in a very matter of fact, like objective way, right? Like at this point, I think we kind of know who Christian Kolina is as a keeper, the good and the bad. And yes, there might be some small improvements that happen over time, but I would say as a fan, I don't know that I expect Kolina to come out and get that ball. I think I lean more along the lines of Adilson Milanda has to do better in that situation. As you said, he cannot get out jumped. He can't get out jumped that easily by a smaller guy. I can't remember what Adilson Milanda is. What is he, like 6'2", 6'3"?
He's like 6'2 or something, yeah.
6'3". I mean, I think Moyle is listed at like 5'10", 5'11". Like, Moyle's not a small guy, but, you know, you want your center back to not get beat that poorly. For me, for this goal, I've been critical in the past of Kolina, and I've done what I did to Milanda on the first goal, where maybe I've been overly critical as well, but... for this goal, I don't expect him to come out and claim that.
Yeah. Ewan, you want in on this at all? You want to start to talk about the good stuff where Charlotte scores?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always driving Kolina debates in terms of distribution, in terms of just kind of command of area. But I do agree with Josh. This is one where you wouldn't expect a goalkeeper to come claim this. Like, a goalkeeper potentially could, but when you think about if a keeper does come out there and try to punch it, reward is, yeah, you get a good punch. The risk is you miss it, and all it takes is a fairly limp header towards goal to just trickle into a net that's now unprotected. So even if a goalkeeper could get something on that, no coach would advise it, because all you're doing by trying to claim that ball is actually increasing the risk of a goal happening, even if it also increases the chance of the ball being cleared or claimed. So yeah, it's not something that you would ever coach for a keeper to claim something, claim it there. So yeah, Kalida's absolved of blame for me, which is a, you know, rare that those words would come out of my mouth, I suppose.
But unanimous decision.
Yeah, remember this, Crowncast listeners. Ewan says Kolina is absolved.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And strange that he would also say that it's on Milanda as well, I guess. He doesn't anticipate it very well. He doesn't anticipate the man making the run into the box, and he doesn't kind of get his body prepared, whether it be to actually jump or body position wise to give himself an advantage against the, is it Mouye? Is it pronounced?
I think it's Mule.
Mule. Okay. Oh yeah. I'm reading it as an I instead of an L. Oh. Blonde moment for me, but yeah, it's he doesn't position his body well against Mule. We talked about Enzo Capetti, you know, with the assist, non-assist. Did he mean it? Didn't he mean it? Ball through his legs, that happened against Toronto, I believe. Mm-hmm. Oh, it wasn't Toronto. It was a game before against Vancouver. And one of the things that we mentioned there was he may have meant it, he didn't, or he may have not meant it. But the reason why that goal happens is because he gets his body positioned so well against the defender and gives himself the advantage that whether he gets a touch or whether he doesn't, the defender isn't going to get a touch. Whereas here, because, you know, Milanda's, you know, he's not really observing very well. He doesn't get his body positioned very well. He's at such a disadvantage as to where Mule is either he's going to head it at the goal, or he's going to head it wide, or he's going to head it over the bar. The one thing that is going to happen is Milanda's going to win the header because he's just anticipating it better and he gets his body up earlier. And just, yeah, it's all about the anticipation here, and you can pick nits in other areas, but yeah, Blando with a size advantage has just got to get up and deal with that better is the long and the short of it.
So I'm gonna push us ahead into Charlotte's goal. And there's a lot that we can talk about in this particular goal because it is chaos. But the chaos starts and very nearly ends and potentially should have ended with Yere Uranen. There's a huge crossover from the right. Yere is there. He has pushed all the way up into the attack. And with a one-touch ball off of his foot, sort of flying through the air, he hits it up into the sky to the center of the box. I'll be really honest with you. I've watched it quite a few times, and I cannot tell you for certain that Yere had any idea where that touch was going. It felt like I'm not going to be able to control this. I may as well poke it towards the center. And you know what? I don't hate that. Like, there is a point at which I wish I could say everything should be perfect and every pass should be just a little bit ahead of the person who's running so they can keep it in their stride, et cetera, et cetera. But I have come onto this podcast before, and I will continue to come onto this podcast and say, continuously applying pressure in the opponent's box does not always mean that you have a perfect pass, walk it into the back of the net play. Sometimes dumb luck falls your way. Sometimes it just works. Sometimes you flip a coin and it lands heads, and sometimes you flip a coin and it lands tails. And I think we have an example of this first ball being one that ultimately flips and lands for Charlotte. It comes back to him via a Nashville player. He does a fantastic job of running into the middle, where he picks up the ball in a fantastic shooting position. I mean, any striker in the world who saw the ball right there would have put their foot through it first time. Jere Urinen is not a striker, and he does not put his foot through it the first time. And when he takes that extra touch, in real time, I died on the inside. I went, no, that was the one. That was the chance. Put your foot through it, and there's a high chance that shot goes in. Instead, Jere big brains it, 10,000 IQ, draws the defenders in towards him, slides the ball off to Brett Diagata, who calmly slots it into the side netting. So, Ewan, I'm going to start with you on this one. One, what is your opinion on the fact that luck is okay, that sometimes it's fine to say you did the next best thing and it fell your way? And two, should Jere have taken the shot, or is he smarter than all of us and just baited Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, luck is baked into every single piece of football, I suppose. Not every piece, but throughout a game, everything is going to have a little bit of luck baked into it. So it's fine to not overanalyze and say that, you know, maybe it's not the best touch and, you know, their defender gets there first and it lands back at Urinen. Like, it's what you do from those moments which makes the difference. And from that point onwards, I don't think there's any luck about this goal, which obviously feeds on to your next point, which is, should he have had a shot or should he have passed it? This isn't just playing the results of this. I think it's absolutely the best choice for him to pass it. He's staring down Diagara, who's there, and as he's staring at him, there's a left back coming across who is, by a millisecond, leaving him in more and more space to have a shot on his stronger foot versus Jere Urinen. And maybe this is the more deciding factor rather than him wanting to make the extra pass. The fact that Jere Urinen has the ball on his right foot, wanting to shoot, versus maybe if he's left, he actually does shoot it, but now he's got it on his weaker foot. He's staring down the player with a left back coming in at speed. And, you know, it's probably more of a question. I think if you, from a Nashville perspective, this is more of a question, like, does Washington make the right play? I think it was Taylor Washington who was in that situation, coming across it at quite a high speed. And from watching a little bit of him just generally and before this, I suppose that's kind of his issue, is the decision-making stuff, because he's very good going forward and we saw it, but it's the decision-making stuff defensively which gets him, you know, when he's in two minds, which is kind of been his Achilles heel, I suppose. But yeah, that's more the question for me, because I think as soon as he does make that decision to come across, Urinen is absolutely right to make the extra pass. It's a truism across a lot of sports that making an extra pass for a guy who's going to be in more space is always the right thing to do. And when you think left-back Jere Urinen on his weaker foot versus playmaker Brett Diagra on his stronger foot, it's the right decision all day long. But yeah, whether it was informed by the fact that Jere Urinen would have been taking it on his weaker foot, I don't know. But, you know, only he knows that. But the process there is absolutely right. Passing is absolutely the right decision. And yeah, even if that doesn't end in a goal and Brett Diagra puts it wide or the keeper saves it, I would say, yeah, he's made the right pass there 100%.
So I don't want to take someone who deserves credit in this play out. And that is, it does come off Jere, get touched by a Nashville player, go back to Jere. It then goes back to Ajimong, who in a very good touch lays it directly onto the penalty spot. So I don't want to take out Patty and his work in this. He had a very good touch. He held off quite a few defenders to help open this space. Just getting his name out there because he deserves it. Josh, how are you looking at this?
First, I want to say that I actually think that the first touch for Yurinen, whether he feels he could ever control that ball or not, I don't know. I think he is absolutely trying to loop that onto Arfield's path, because I think it's Arfield who is making a pretty good run in behind.
Mm-hmm. It is Arfield.
Yeah. And so I think that he's meaning that as a pass. It's a really hard thing to do, and I actually don't think he's that far off. I mean, to cushion that ball and like try to loop it into that space, that's really hard, and he's really close to actually doing that. I agree with you, and I think I look at this as a left back who is a left footer. I've not seen enough of Yurinen to know how good his right is or not. I think that touch he takes is because it's on his weaker foot, and he needs to take that touch before he feels comfortable taking the shot. Mm-hmm. And I think once he takes that touch, I think it's really good on him to still see what Diagara is doing to the side of him and to then make that pass. Because again, as Ewan said, the Nashville defender has come over. The center back who was trying to break it up with Adjuman is also like gets shot faked basically and goes down to one knee on the touch. So I give Yurinen whatever luck was involved. There was still a lot of really good play from the idea to put it to Arfield, him continuing into space to get that second ball, the pass he makes to Adjuman, again, his continued running into space, right? Like, at multiple points, this could have gone really wrong, and it didn't because he actually kept going. And that's what's been really exciting for me this year, seeing Yurinen, is I don't think we saw a lot of that because of our play style last year. You saw a lot of this getting forward in his highlights, I felt like, when we first signed him, but we didn't see this player last year under Latanzio. And I think that this is a guy who is going to be a very big contributor for us.
Yeah. I'll say as well, just quickly, Jack Meyer is the player who gets caught in between two, who closes out quickly, not left back Taylor Washington, which kind of goes back to what I was saying about Washington, who is leisurely making his way back into position, which is the reason why this goal happens. It goes back to the defensive instinct and decision-making, which I've touched on a little bit. But it's Jack Meyer who closes out and makes the right decision to force it on forward. But we're very lucky to have a little bit of leisurely defending here, which, if this had happened to us, we would be absolutely fuming at this defensive play.
This falls down to me in a matter of, I think we can speak really highly on Yere, who I think has two touches in this that just happened to work, but he takes advantage of it. He takes what he's given and he makes the most of it. And there's one of my favorite sayings in the world is, in golf, you get good breaks from bad shots, you get bad breaks from good shots, but you've always got to play it where it lies. And Yere gets kind of a good break from a couple of not quite perfect touches, but he plays the ball where it lies and he does it spectacularly. I also think it is deserved to call out Brecht, who gets the ball at his feet quick and gets it out of his feet quick too. That is a skill. It is a talent. It is very difficult to receive a ball and get it out that quickly. He does it very well and accurately and does get us our goal for that game. Ewan, final thoughts? Anything you want to touch on this before we move on?
No, I was just remembering from the kind of first couple of times that I watched this when I had a brain and realized the positioning of the center back and the left back, that we actually do a really good job on the switch. Kind of knowing that space will be available. And it's something that we touched on last week, of that, that has become a part of our game, the switching from one side to another. When we don't have the situation we want on one side, quick switch over, which one is happening now because we're playing with a bit more width, but two, we have, at least in the case of Yurinen, one fullback who's very capable, not only of playing the switch, which Burn is in this case, he plays a pass, but more importantly,
fullback to fullback.
Yeah. Both guys can play the pass. More importantly, I guess Yurinen is good at taking advantage of it once he's in that attacking position. Burnett's a little bit 50-50 with what he can do on the ball getting further up the pitch, but Yurinen, there's no question that the reason why this is effective is because he can actually get down the line and overlap and can also underlap, come inside and be effective in those areas. Again, bit of luck baked in there because it's not a great touch, but once the ball comes back to him, very calm, very composed, knows what he's doing, and an element of our game which we have not seen for a little while, seeing that attacking threat far up the pitch from the fullbacks.
Okay, Josh, I'm going to go to you with this one. And that is, there have been pictures released of Kerwin Vargas in a boot. I can tell you, I specifically do not have a report of exactly how bad it is, but I have gotten hints that it's not good. We now have potentially people who could play on the wings in Ben Bender, who's injured. I think that's a stretch, but if we're adding people who have played on the wings, Ben Bender, who's injured, we have Brandon Cambridge, who's injured. We now have Kerwin Vargas, who's injured. We have Breck Diagra, who is currently potentially our best 10. And we have Yuri Tavares, who is an attacking center forward.
Played on the wings for Racing.
and we have kids. So on a scale of 1 to panic, how much panic are we?
I don't know that I would describe myself as panicked. I want to wait one game to get to that point. I will say, on a scale of 1 to 10 how concerned I am, I'm probably at a 7 or an 8. I actually do think that this is a very significant development. We had one true winger available in Vargas currently, and now we don't. And so I think your best option is to continue to have Yuri as a left winger. I think it's probably going to be Brecht being pushed out to the right-hand side because he has played there before in his career. But what that does is then it puts further stress onto the midfield, where you have Diani, who makes his debut, and then a bunch of senior gentlemen, which we've talked about already this year with Westwood, Arfield, Junior Urso. What are those legs like? There's a lot missing from this team right now. Like, this feels like both a really old team right now and a really young team right now at the same time, and not in a great way. I'm really worried about the wing situation. I'm hoping it's not as bad. I am worried because he couldn't go on. And if we're calling it an ankle injury and he couldn't, this doesn't feel like it's a simple, like, turn the ankle type thing. This feels something, not end of season, but something slightly more significant. I also do wonder how this affects Abada, because now it feels like we kind of have to rush him into the lineup. Whereas we talked before about, can you kind of get away with maybe giving him a few bench appearances and sub appearances? Now it kind of feels like you got your visa, get off the plane, onto the pitch, right? Like,
well, it's not aided by the fact that Liel Abada will probably be playing for his national team, so also will not be immediately available. But beyond that, I think the question that
Jalen Lindsay at right wing.
Yeah, Jalen Lindsay. Play Jalen Lindsay every game. No. In one position or another. Ewan looks very displeased by that thought.
Play no wings. That's actually my real thing. We're gonna do a rectangle in the middle.
It's what we did 55 minutes into the Nashville game.
Exactly.
Pretty much.
No wings.
We practiced for it.
Hold on. Because I do want to get to the thought question here for Ewan. And that is, Ewan, sometimes the opportunity comes when the opportunity comes, and you are either ready to jump the gap and take advantage of the opportunity, or you're not. There is a very real place coming up where Berchimus is potentially not just a sub off the bench, but is required, is all hands on deck. And the truth is, there's a lot about this kid that is really, really talented and really, really good. And I want to be clear before I hand this question off. If Nymphosa Berchimus comes onto this team, we as fans and analysts cannot expect him to be perfect. He is 16, I believe. We cannot expect him to act the same way as players who are 22, who we consider to be quite young. We cannot expect him to make the same level of decisions as players who we consider who are 24, who we still consider to be sometimes not quite at their peak yet. This is a 16-year-old kid. But the truth of the matter is, he is very fast. He is committed. He goes into every challenge like it's his last challenge. I think he has the energy to potentially get back and do some of the very necessary defensive work that we could see. And if you're good enough, as Dean Smith has quoted, you're old enough. Ewan, is this the door opening for Burchamus, or is this a position where this man is too young and we can't put this on him?
It's the door opening for him to have the chance to be an impact sub, I think. I wouldn't assume that he would be starting. Especially, you talk about the injuries out wide and how that has opened up this opportunity, obviously. I think specifically, in terms of a start, I don't think he would put Ajimang and Burchamus in the same starting lineup. I think for a team that emphasises out-of-possession stuff so much, you're looking at a little bit too much out-of-possession liability there. I think if we're just to kind of theoretically game plan here with the injuries that you mentioned, we're looking at finishing with that those forward six players, not forward six players, but midfield onwards, that we ended the game with or played the majority of the second half with against Nashville. It's a Diaga and Arfield occupying the wide spaces and playing narrow with the fullbacks given license to get on a little bit, with Westwood playing independently in midfield a little further back and Diani playing a little bit further forward, but with a responsibility because of how good an athlete he is to both get involved in stopping their press and get onto their centre-backs a little bit and deep midfield, but also know that he has responsibility of defending the deep areas as well. I think, yeah, from a game plan perspective, it would be that. Be really solid out of possession. Get the game to the point where 65, 70 minutes, it's 0-0, 1-0 down, 1-0 up, whatever it may be, and then you're introducing Burchamus into a game. If we had Capetti, I could maybe see it happening because I just think he offers you that little bit more hold up and you don't have to worry about your out possession stuff as much if you have more possession and if the game is more settled and if there's less transition. But just based off what we saw against Nashville, it's a hard environment to put a winger into when the game is so back and forth, so basketball-y. It'd be unfair on him. And I think Dean Smith is he's too smart to throw him into a game like that. I think it's much more likely that if those injuries to wingers mean that we have to go with the players that were available for the second half against Nashville, then we see that same lineup. And then Burchamus has the chance to be introduced later in the game, also in front of a home crowd where he'd have everyone behind him rather than a tough road atmosphere where there'd be a little bit more animosity for him. It'd all be a little bit nicer for him going into that environment and a game state where players are a little bit more tired and things like that. And he can go affect a game rather than have all that responsibility from the start of it. I think that's what we should do, and I think that's what Dean Smith would do.
So you've come in with the logic again, but unfortunately, it might have put out my excitement for potentially seeing Mvasha Burchamus play for Charlotte FC. Josh, do you want to get on this before we move on?
Yeah, I just want to say real quick that Ewan makes a lot of sound, reasonable, and ultimately smart points.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. I would much prefer to see Burchamus start than Scott Arfield. And that is because I've said it since Scott Arfield has joined. He is not a starter for this club. He is a substitute. And in the real world, practicality reigns supreme. And I think that Ewan is correct. And I don't think that Burchamus is going to start. But man, I got to tell you, there is a sick side to me that would love to see Burchamus, Yuri Tavares, and even Ajimon up top and just sort of see what happens. It probably would go pretty poorly. But man, there's something about Burchamus that just really gets some. Again, sometimes they're just players, and it's not just because he's 16. There's just something about the kid when he walks on the pitch that, like, you can't help but get excited for. So he throws me into that irrational end a little bit more than I normally am.
I'm going to say this now. I'm going to put down a bet, right? And that is, I think at some point in time during the season, we are going to see a front three of Burchamus on the left, of Yuri Tavares in the center, and of Liel Abada on the right. And I don't think we're ever going to see that in a starting lineup, but I do think there is going to be a time where we see that. You know, one of the things that we have to remember is that Berchemis and Yuri Tavarsh have played together for some time. They know each other. I do believe there is some language barriers there, but they have played together before, and whether or not they can transition that to a higher level, Ewan is looking at me like they're not going to be able to, but that is okay.
We had a coach say, if you're good enough, you're old enough. And we have a very injured team. It's definitely realistic.
Eventually, we are going to have to put these on video just so the listener can get the very clear facial expression from Ewan, which is you're being a fan right now, but not a smart one.
No, I don't do this consciously. Maybe something's going on. I don't know.
I love you, buddy. You're the best. Okay, I'm going to jump back to Ewan just because Scott Arfield shows up, and I would not call it a great performance from Scott Arfield. You want to talk about it, Ewan?
Yeah, Josh touched on it there. He prefers him as an impact sub rather than a starter. I think that's probably where his future is at this stage, and probably something which he'd be fairly happy with himself to know that he's coming in and impacting games late, because it's a lot more fun coming in impacting games late when you're versus starting them and feeling a little bit off the pace, which is probably the way you'd sum up his game. Just the problem I had specifically in this game was that he was just a little bit too slow to get into passing lanes to help out most notably Brett Diagra once he come on, but also Cohen Vargas in the first 20 minutes of the game, and just kind of performing his role properly to act as a bit of a safety net. One of the things that we've seen from Brett Diagra in the first three games, and he didn't really get a lot of praise, and his performances weren't really seen as being that good because there wasn't a lot of exciting moments to them. But he was always good at providing relief and always good at kind of being in good areas to help us retain possession. Almost kind of similar to Capetti in that way, that the goals weren't there and it wasn't as headline grabbing, but it helped us keep possession. It helped us get a little bit further up the field. And in this game, it maybe stands out a little bit more as well, because you also have Pajuk Ajimang up there who was really having a tough time holding the ball up and making it stick. And then it's compounded with Scott Arfield not showing himself really well in certain areas. And it's the kind of thing where the player on the ball who maybe doesn't play the right pass or plays what doesn't look like the right pass, you look at them and think, maybe he was a bit off it, maybe he's made the wrong decision there, when really they're just not on the same tempo, because they're used to Brett Diagra showing himself in those areas, and Arfield was just a little bit off there. And it all feeds into what I think everyone took away from this game, and what I think Dean Smith also mentioned post-match, was that this game was the most transitional game that we've seen of all four of our games. It was the most back and forth. It was the game where we have the least control, and we're a team who wants to play with a lot of control, use our out-of-possession stuff to our advantage, keep the opposition penned in, and just win on the margins, which we spoke about, I think, in every post-match, in every Wednesday that we've done after matches so far this year. This was the game where we struggled the most with it. And I think Ajimang and also Arfield playing in that striker and number 10 role were the reasons why, because not quite as good out of possession. Arfield and Diagra kind of splitting hairs there. Diagra a little bit better there, but mainly the in-possession stuff. We just weren't able to retain and recycle and keep sustained pressure on the opposition as well as we were with Diagra. So, yeah. Scott Arfield, not as good a start as Diagra, probably not a headline grabber, probably at the stage where we're all pretty comfortable with him coming on with 20 minutes to go in games at a level or games that are close generally, and him being a bit of a spark plug and adding his experience and his technical quality to those games when they're in those situations where, yeah, 1-1, 20 minutes left, get Arfield on and let him get at him.
Yeah, we've talked before about the fact that he does feel like an impact sub. He doesn't necessarily feel like a starter. And after this, I don't think my opinion has changed. And I don't think Josh's opinion has changed either. So I'm just going to skip Josh entirely. And instead, I'm going to say, Josh, Jabril Gianni makes his debut. The new man for Charlotte FC in the midfield. How'd you feel about it?
Yeah, I thought Gianni was... okay.
Gianni was okay.
I will say, when I saw him on the pitch, it was hard for my mind not to read him as Derek Jones. And I think you see a lot of similarities in the players. One game is not enough to draw any conclusions. I don't think it was great. I also don't think it was terrible. it mostly looked like a guy who is, in my opinion, who is making his first start in a new league with new teammates. Yep. And I guess what I would say is I hope what I saw is a bottom of the barrel type performance, a baseline, and that it only gets better. At the very least, he was a midfielder under 30 who we were starting, and you can't help but like that, because at least you know he's got some legs underneath him. Like I said, I don't think anything truly jumped out to me about him, good or bad, overly good or overly bad. I want to see more of him. And I do think at this point, again, especially with the injuries on the wings, I think we're going to, if there was any question about like whether he would come in and be in that midfield as a starter, I think, again, with probably Breck being pushed out wide, I think you're definitely going to see him penciled in as a starter for the time being.
Yeah, it was to me, a showcase of somebody who knew 80% of the job. It's probably the way I want to describe it. It looked like you mentioned somebody who came into a new team and this was his first time rollout. I saw moments of spark from him I really liked. You mentioned that you had trouble separating him from DJ in your mind. And I'll be really honest with you. In my mind, he was very separate from DJ. And I don't know if that's just a perception base. I think he's a much better passer than TJ. That could be informed by the fact that we scouted him. And in the scouting, we saw his passing is much better. He definitely seems more comfortable with the ball at his feet than DJ. And he doesn't seem to use the same sort of powerhouse build. You know, DJ to me felt like a tank. DJ felt like something that would slowly roll his way up the field until he hit like a mountainside and then he couldn't climb it. Whereas Diani to me feels a little bit more mobile, a little bit more capable of overcoming obstacles. But I also didn't quite see in Diani that ability to roll over obstacles, that ability to just physically dominate the space the way DJ did. So I don't know if we're doing him a disservice to keep comparing him to DJ, but it's hard not to. I saw a little bit of speed out of Diani where he pushed up, and the chance that he goes and he makes the run in for the header, I like that he has a little bit of that in him. But overall, for this match, it felt like somebody who really understood 80% of the job and was told, get in there, kid, figure it out. Ewan, final thoughts on Diani?
Yeah, he's got obvious qualities in certain areas. The physicality is obvious. He, on his side, did a really good job of shutting down their attacks generally. Well, not maybe shutting them down, but just causing a little bit of chaos and making it difficult for them to find the passing lines there. Every time he was in a duel with when Alex Muehl came over there, whose name I feel bad for forgetting given how much I watched the Jesse Marsh Red Bull stuff, who usually can threaten in those kind of areas. He did a good job of muddying that up a little bit. But you mentioned there that, you know, the passing. For me, the in-possession stuff, that does serve as a big difference from Derek Jones. Like, the out-of-possession, like, can get a foot in, good size, everything like that. Like, kind of similar in those areas. I think on the ball, there's just so many moments where he received the ball, so many moments in this, not in just in this game, but from what I've watched from him before, where he's receiving the ball with his back to the opposition in the half turn, and he's not as strong as you would hope for him to be at his size. Whereas Derek Jones can receive the ball with his back to goal, get it under, and not immediately play on the half turn, but he can be prepared for the man to come in and press him, keep him away. Then once that space is abandoned, he's either making a quick pass back to the centre back and they're getting the ball into the space that's been evacuated by the presser, or he can turn him, use his size to just keep him away, and then we're away with the play. In the case with Diani, the ball was getting kicked from under his feet a little bit. Players were finding ways to get round him, even though he has such a big frame. He maybe doesn't know how to use it so well. And it worked out for him in a couple of occasions where the ball kind of bounced around and then the space made itself apparent and he gets the ball through. I think that happened maybe 5 minutes into the second half, where we get a bit of space where Shackmore presses up high, ball becomes a little bit muddy, and then he manages to poke it through, which, you know, is a pretty good pass, but, you know, you're not going to get that lucky every single time. So yeah, there's definitely a lot to work on, but of course there's obvious stuff which he brings to the table with his size and with his athletic ability. those changes that we made in the second half when we brought Tavares on and he had a little bit more out of possession responsibility, getting higher up and muddying their build up, I think we saw the best out of him once he was able to do that role. Because then you're just showing off how big an athlete you are and how many things you're able to do in terms of closing down and you know, getting in people's faces. So again, this is another player who may be the story of this season, like it was with Westwood, not similar players, but a similar narrative where they're playing deep. And I'm saying week after week that I actually think this is someone who might be a bit more effective playing further up. In the case with Westwood, it was because I think he had a little bit more quality on the ball. In the case of Diarni, in reference to Dean Smith's system, where out of possession is such an emphasis in this specific way, it might be because I just think he's a little bit better at muddying up the pressure and IDing the keys, things like that. But, you know, we don't want to overreact on one game. So we're going to just let it bake and see how he gets on.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and hold us there on the Diarni. We did get some feedback from the listeners that said they do enjoy some longer episodes on occasion. And we're going to be delivering because we're like an hour into this one. I am going to skip a part that we had talked about previously. And I'm going to just very quickly give an honorary crown to Nashville's keeper, a man named Joe Willis, purely for his facial hair. We do it every year. Every year, it's beautiful. Every year, it's flowing. It's really
respect.
Just a gem of a mustache.
Game recognizes game.
Game recognizes game. So we hate that you're also a decent keeper and managed to stop us from scoring, but your mustache is spectacular. And on that note, that'll allow me to transition and say thank you so much to our sponsors. We have been picked up by DraftKings Sportsbook. They are helping us maintain the show. So the wait is over. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of NASCAR, is now live in North Carolina. You can now legally bet on all your favorite sports at any time right here in North Carolina with DraftKings. For a limited time, new customers who sign up with promo code QCPN and bet $5 will receive $250 instantly in bonus bets. DraftKings has the best features, including same-game parlays, player props, and more, with fast and easy payouts right at your fingertips. Now, we are going to be playing Columbus Crew next, very much thanks to Josh, who has helped me find that the betting line for that is Charlotte FC plus 170, a draw plus 225, and Columbus Crew plus 145. So those might be numbers that you need if you wanted to go and potentially put down that $5 bet on that game. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now using code QCPN and bet $5 to get $250 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code QCPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposits and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and used under license. Whew, we're back. We're back. That was a mouthful. I had to do a lot there. Again, if you would like to have these episodes without the ads, you can join us on Patreon at Patreon.com/thecrowncast and help support us over there. You'll get a version of these where you will not have to hear the ads. Thank you to DraftKings for helping us keep the show going. Let's move into it. We're already quite far into the episode, and there is a big discussion that we'd like to have, even though we don't normally do it. We don't normally talk referees. It's not normally in our playbook. It's not something that, you know, regular listeners of their shows will have heard me said. You can't control the referees. It's not worth our discussion, and it doesn't necessarily make for good listening. And Josh brought up a very good point that sometimes it needs to be addressed. The refereeing performance in this one has a couple of calls that are being widely shouted out as significant problems. One of them I am probably going to disagree with the regular fan base, and one of them I'm going to say was a big call that went the wrong way and needs to be said. My immediate point before I pass this off to Josh is that, as a general rule, I would rather a referee err towards the side of not giving fouls. As long as he doesn't see anyone who is intentionally going into injured players, who is being malicious, if there's no threat or danger to the people, the professionals on the field, I would rather a referee see a 50-50 and go, maybe I don't decide the game with a 50-50. But some things aren't 50-50. So, Josh, do you want to talk first and foremost about the 54th minute tackle, what you saw there?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big decisions that I think a lot of people were on. Adjiman is sort of in on goal. A Nashville defender comes in, fouls Adjiman, also gets a bit of the ball. I think Adjiman is maybe like a yard or two outside of the box. Like, it really does look like if he just can get over this guy, he is in one-on-one. The Nashville defender ends up getting a yellow card on this. And I've seen a lot of talk where a lot of people thought it should have been a red because Adjiman was basically, you know, in on goal. I actually think the ref gets it correct in this situation, for a couple reasons. One, you pointed out, Logan, before we came on, the Nashville defender does get some of the ball. You can still foul a player. Even if you get a ball, it can still be deemed a dangerous tackle. But because he gets that ball, because the touch or the fact that he gets the ball puts it so far away from Adjiman, and the fact that there is another Nashville defender near the play, I think all those factors contribute to not a red card. And I think, as you said, I would tend to like a ref to give a yellow in that situation rather than be too quick with a red. There are times when a red is needed in a game, but most of the time, if a red happens, it kind of ruins the game, for better or worse. You know, that usually depends on if it benefits or doesn't your team. In general, though, I would prefer to watch games that are 11v11. And so if it's at all close, I'm okay with a ref siding on the yellow side rather than the red. And again, I just think he gets it right here. I think if Adjiman is able to just sort of toe poke that ball and it's really close to him and the defender doesn't get any of the ball and takes Adjiman out, red. That doesn't happen. And so, you know, again, you got to give him credit for this particular one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to jump in here. I'm going to say, obviously, it's a bad back pass from Nashville that Patrick Adjiman does a great job of jumping on. Way to be alert. Fantastic. I think the way most people saw it, and myself saw it live, was that Patrick Adjiman got the ball cleanly, and the defender did not make a play towards the ball. He made a professional, cynical foul of taking out the player when he knew there was danger. If you go back and watch it, that's not what happened. It's not a professional foul. It's not a cynical foul. It's a dumb foul. It's somebody who realized their teammate did something dumb and lunged out. And he does make contact with the ball, and he goes into it recklessly, and he also makes a foul-level contact with Patrick Adjiman. And as a result, I think the yellow for it being essentially reckless play, not violent conduct, is appropriate. Ewan, anything you want to add on to this one before we go to the big one?
No, not really. I suppose the next one is the big one, isn't it? Yeah, like you say, there's a little touch on the ball. There's a double jeopardy rule, which means that if you are trying to play the ball, but it denies a goal scoring opportunity, it is still a yellow anyway. And the defender coming across adds enough. There's just enough stuff there as to where a foul and a yellow is fair enough. So, yeah, not too controversial one, I think, here.
So then, Ewan, I'll let you start with the big one. And that is, I believe it's 82nd minute. Patrick Adjiman, big man, gets onto his shooting foot, planted, ready to fire the ball, and gets taken out as though it was an American football match. How is this not a penalty, Ewan?
I mean, it didn't get given on the pitch, and then they have some kind of VAR check, whether it was extensive or not. It didn't stop the game for very long, and they clear it on that as well. Yeah, you got two chances of them kind of things. It either gets given on the field or not, and then it goes to VAR. A lot of those kind of decisions where it's upper body stuff, it does seem like the on-field decision is going to determine what VAR says. Like, very rarely does that kind of stuff get overturned by VAR. It just feels like it's so tough to judge on some of them that they just kind of stick with what's on the field, and they don't want to do anything controversial. There was an incident on 30 minutes in this game where Patrick Adjumann goes down pretty easily in a, you know, shoulder-to-shoulder contact. Referee doesn't give it. You always wonder if those kind of things play in the mind of a referee when it comes to something later in the game, if you've got a player who's going down a little bit too easily. I know that's something else that Dean Smith pointed out in the post-match press conference, because that happened about half a minute before their first goal. And that was really clutching at straws stuff in terms of blaming a referee for something. But yeah, this could have been a penalty. Might not have been. If it was given as a pen, probably just get overturned by VAR. It wasn't given as a pen. Probably, and we knew in this instance it didn't get given as a pen. It didn't get overturned by VAR. At some stage in the coming weeks, we're going to get the rub of the green on a decision. And then in the weeks after that, we're going to have a decision go against us. And that's going to, it's going to fold and fold and regress. And at the end of the season, everything will be fine. And it's okay. It's not something that is going to dwell on us for the rest of the season. There's no agenda against us, which I've seen people talking about, that they don't want us to succeed. But yeah, in this instance, yeah, it could have been a pen. I'm sure if they gave it, it would have been upheld. But yeah, I don't know.
So I thought I'd start with Ewan because he would lead us in to Josh and I going two-footed into this referee.
Yeah.
What might have been the better play was maybe you and I should have gone two-footed into the referee and then let Ewan talk us down. But it's too late for that. We've already done it this way. So, Josh, talk to me about this call.
Yeah, I'm not going to be as diplomatic as Ewan. I do agree with his overall premise that I think over a year it probably ends up averaging out. What I will say for me is that this is not a shoulder to shoulder, because only one of these players is going with his shoulder, and that is the Nashville defender who's coming up from behind Adjumann while Adjumann is about to shoot. I don't think that there is any attempt by that Nashville player to play the ball or go for the ball. I think what he is simply doing is using his body to try to knock Adjumann down. I think that his size, that being Adjumann, plays a role in this. I think Ewan is probably right to point to some maybe other times when he's gone down, and so maybe that plays something. But at the end of the day, when I look back at that, I saw it live. I thought it was a pen. I saw the replay. I thought it was a pen. I watched the replay four more times, and each time I just thought it was a pen. And I thought it was a silly one, because as a Adjumann is not scoring, in my opinion, from that position. And that's what also makes it a cynical and just stupid foul. In the 82nd minute, it's hard. That's a hard one for me to swallow, because I don't want to say it costs us 2 points. You never know. Do we make we've already missed a PK this year. We could have very well missed another one, but you kind of think that we're going to score the PK. It's now the 80 something minute. You're tied 2-2. You're probably really happy getting a point away at Nashville. And so you're probably not going too crazy. And this team has shown that they can defend well, as opposed to last year. For me, I can't help but look and think that we probably got robbed of a couple points in this situation, and that sounds extreme. And I know there are some people out there who are going to, you know, disagree with that or be all for it, but I look at this and it's a penalty to me. It's a penalty every day, and I think it has real world implications.
Well, apparently I'm going to be the one who goes two-footed into him. It was a disgrace of a call. The simple situation here is it was described eloquently by Josh, and it was described very honestly in the fact that calls go your way sometimes and they don't go your way sometimes. I'm going to describe it for what it was. It was a cynical, no attempt on the ball, in the box, on a player who is actively shooting. It is a foul, clear as day. And the fact that it was not called by the referee on the field in and of itself in that situation is a disgrace. There has been so much talk about the referees and about the replacement refs, and we have stayed away from it. But there are things that are not 50-50. They are clear and obvious. And I could just about get behind a referee saying, "Ooh, I saw him go down pretty easy earlier. Maybe he didn't feel like he actually had a good shot and he fell over." I could just about get behind that. But getting pushed in the back is a foul anywhere in the field. Every time a player gets the ball and they're in panic mode because they don't know where to pass it, they wait till somebody pushes them back and they fall over the front of it. It's still a foul then, right? They're going down on purpose. That doesn't make it not a foul. And I think if you watch this back in slow motion or in any motion, Patrick Ojemong is not going down on purpose. He gets completely barreled over. It's an American football tackle. So I could be convinced that in real time, a referee wasn't really watching the play, saw how it all came up, and went, maybe that feels a bit soft to me. But anyone who was looking at that in any form of booth who had a replay misrepresented the standards and rules of the MLS. Josh?
I think if we want to get into a little bit of conspiracy here, and I don't like to get into this too often either.
Wait, before I let you go on that path, I want to be very clear. I don't think this is a conspiracy. I don't think this is an anti-Charlotte thing. I think this is one individual call that was done wrong and needs to be acknowledged.
Here's my conspiracy, is that in the wake of this weekend, the MLS commissioners come out and basically said that the replacement refs are doing great, that the data that they have shows that these replacement refs are doing great. And Charlotte fans, it is not just us who is upset with the calls that are happening this weekend. It is many, many fan bases. My small conspiracy theory is that if there is reticence on VAR to overturn these type of calls, I think it can only be backed up by this, by the desire of the league to have these replacement refs be shown in a good light. Yeah. Maybe conspiracy is slightly too strong for that, but I would not be surprised if there's pressure to really, as sort of you guys alluded to, we're not overturning a call unless it is super blatantly wrong. And there's small arguments you can make on this one to justify that it's not. And I do think that there could be something in that for wanting to, again, justify the league's position that these refs are doing great when most of us can see that that's not quite the case.
Yeah, I know that if you go and listen to football media around the world, most people aren't happy with VAR. And they're not happy with VAR because if you're going to stop the game, if you're going to put it in slow-mo, if you are going to take the time to reach the correct decision, reach the correct decision. And that is what usually drives frustration in fans, is that we have now been told we have this technology, we have the ability to go and reach the correct decision. And it just feels like the person in the booth is backing up their mate on the field. That is not the way it always is. There will be VAR calls in the future that are very good, that overturn referees' calls in the future. Charlotte FC will benefit from referees on field making mistakes that VAR does not overturn. What Ewan said in the beginning of all this is true. This is not an anti-Charlotte thing. This is not a conspiracy. What it is one individual moment where I hope the referees and the people who review the referees can sit down and say, boys, we can do better than this. Ewan, any final thoughts on the referees? Was I just outright rude?
I mean, if the refs are bad, then they'll be bad in favor of us soon. I don't know of any person who follows football or of any league in anywhere in the world who thinks the refs in their league are good. Majority of fans in any league think that the refs could ultimately be doing better. And ultimately, if they are bad, then they were bad for us last weekend and they will be good for us soon and it will all even out. That's basically my main point on this, is that this stuff is always going to even out. Like, we just won't focus on it as much when it goes our way. If we win off the back of a bad refereeing call, we will talk about how we'll do a post-react and we'll do crowns and then we'll do a Wednesday pod and we'll talk about how good we thought a lot of our players were. Whereas that'll be the same case for whatever Nashville podcasts are on now. They're not going to be focusing on this Patrick Ojemong thing. They're going to be like, oh, wow, what a cross. What a header from Sam Surridge, DP. He's really showing his worth. Like, they won't talk about this Ojemong call for like a second. And it'll be their turn, as much as it is for us. They'll have a call probably go against them, which they feel is hard done by. And that's, they'll focus on it as much as we have just done. It's important to point out because people are interested in it, and it's a big talking point in MLS at the moment because of everything that's going on with the officiating. But ultimately, I just feel like overall, it's going to even out. So look forward to whatever call comes our way coming from me.
I will not deny that it is going to even out. I do believe everything over the course of a season comes to a relatively flat and level plane. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to know why we don't usually talk referees, that's why.
My fault. I feel like a spokesman for the league.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I am checking your financial records just to make sure you haven't had money deposited into your account.
You're currently wearing a MLS branded hat. I think that's a scarf that just says MLS refs in the background.
I've also assured them that I'm eating well, and my well-being is in good tact, and my family is safe.
Oh my gosh. Okay, before we get into real trouble, now that we're I don't even know, we're like an hour and a half into this, we are going to be playing Columbus. Columbus is a very good team. Josh, you want to give us the rundown on Columbus before we get out of here?
Yeah, the rundown with Columbus so far is that they're off to a great start. 3 wins and a draw. They haven't let in many goals yet. It's only 2 goals allowed to 7 goals scored. And the primary reason is going to be Cucho Hernandez. You know, kind of a bit player when he was at Watford. He is one of the best players in MLS. The man can score. He's done it consistently since he stepped foot into this league. He's already got 3 goals and an assist this year. None of those are... Actually, he has 1 PK attempted, so he could even have another goal. It looks like he missed a PK. This guy is a scorer, and he has to be the focus of whatever game plan that we have. You talk about, you know, Milanda sort of switching off a little bit this past game. That happens against Cucho Hernandez, it can get ugly. Another guy as fans that I would keep an eye on, someone I'm pretty high on, is the young midfielder Aiden Morris. He's 22, I believe. He's a good passer. He's a decent defender, pretty good in possession on the ball. And he'll chip in goals. Last year he had 7 goal contributions. This year he already has a goal. I don't know that he's a really well-known name outside of maybe some of the U.S. men's national team talk, and maybe if you're really diehard into the league. But I think he's a really good player, and I think he's someone who you're probably going to want Diani and Westfield and company to do a good job of not getting time on the ball with. But really, it comes down to, can you contain Cucho Hernandez, in my opinion? If you can, I think you have a good shot, especially at home, of getting something from the game. If you can't, he can be a game record for this league.
So, Josh, you know what I'm going to ask you, because I ask it to you every time. Charlotte FC is going to score 3 goals in this, I hope. Where is Charlotte FC going to make their inroads?
You know, I can't say I've seen too much, to be honest with you. I've seen too much of Columbus this year. I would say we're going to need to be opportunistic this game. And we've talked in the past about how so far this has kind of been a moments team, where a set piece, a dead ball, has led to a goal. That's kind of what I'm going to be looking for here. Columbus do like to have possession. So far this year, we really haven't been keeping possession of the ball. This feels like a game where if we could make the most out of a corner or a set piece, nick a goal, nick a couple goals maybe, and then defend really well, I think that's kind of the path forward. This is a really good team. You know, a lot of people were upset when Derek Jones left us. He's only gone into two games for this club. He's played a total of 6 minutes for this club. And Derek Jones would probably be a starter for us this year. And I think that talks about the quality that is in this side. And so I think we're just going to have to be a really disciplined side, be okay with not having the ball as much. That can be a hard thing to do when you're at home, because, you know, the fans are going to want you to have the ball. But I think defend well, maybe get a nick a goal from a corner, and try to get out of there with maybe only allowing 1 goal to them. if you can get a couple.
All right. I am going to go ahead over to you and Ewan. Thoughts on this one before we give our predictions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always interested when we play fun coaches. and this is one of those examples. Wilfred Nancy is one of my favorite coaches in MLS. And people remember last year, I think, unless I'm getting this wrong, we had one of our better wins of last season against Wilfred Nancy, mm-hmm. taking advantage of that high line that they like to play. We're looking to get in behind there, use the ability of our wingers, play a little bit deeper, get those guys out wider than we usually would. And we managed to hit them on the break with a goal. On a kind of simulated transition, get a ball in, Karol Swiderski scores. We win 1-0. Something we've touched on a little bit earlier here is that we are a little bit short on wingers. So that, for a team in Charlotte's position, would be the go-to kind of game plan of an easy way that we'd be able to get after them and create some chances in behind. We don't quite have the personnel to do it. So it goes back to a conversation that we were having a little bit earlier. We can do what I was suggesting and be very boring and good out of possession and make sure that we're not letting them build up in the ways that they'd like to by using experienced wingers who aren't actually really wingers in Diagra and Arfield. Or we can throw caution to the wind. We can bring Berchimus in so that we have an outlet who will be looking to make those in-behind runs. That'll be the big question for Dean Smith. I've already laid out my case that that's what I wouldn't do. But in this specific game, where that is the obvious way to kind of make hay and create chances fairly easily, especially with the fact of who is our best wide threat without wingers. Well, it's Jerry Erin in on the overlap. What's he not going to be doing in that game? He's going to be playing for Charlotte because he's going to be playing for Finland. That almost brings in a little bit more of, okay, if you can get after them out wide, do we really want to play into their hands by being really sound out of structure? Boring Ewan says yes, but fun Dean Smith might go in the opposite direction and say, if we want to make hay earlier, let's get a young winger out there. Let's give them something to think about, push them further back, create that threat. So I'll be really interested in what the actual lineup is for this game, because that I think will tell early what the actual game will look like for the first at least 15, 20 minutes before the adjustments are made after that. It's going to be really interesting to see what we go with in our lineup.
Yeah, I think we could do a whole nother podcast on potentially trying to forecast this lineup because of all the players that will be out / injured. But we're not going to do that because I'm pretty sure this one's already like 2 hours long. Josh, your prediction. Hit us with it.
1-1.
1-1, you and your prediction?
me and Josh can't match again. It can't happen. I'll go
2-2. 2-1.
No. You stay 1-1. I'll go 2-2. I think this is where the dam breaks and we see some, like, a four-goal Dean Smith Charlotte game.
See, I actually think this is going to be a game where we have no way to threaten them and end up just sitting really, really deep and just defending for our lives. And as a result, I think it's going to be pretty low scoring. I think it's going to be a 1-0 loss. But I would like to see us, you know, get in the back there and hopefully find some way through that high line. We'll go ahead and wrap it up there. If you've decided to spend your time with us, thank you so much. We love you. We love having you here. Thank you to Ewan.
Yeah, thank you. Always a pleasure.
And thank you, Josh.
Thanks, guys.
We will talk to you again after we go and take our next 3 points from Columbus. Goodbye.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.